Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the world city more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I talked to Astra Taylor, an author and filmmaker whose new documentary, What is Democracy?, is part of this year's Guelph Film Festival, one of the first and oldest documentary film festivals in the world. It's a timely film, What is Democracy?. It has played at the Toronto and Vancouver International Film Festivals and was a grand jury nominee at the Sheffield Doc Fest earlier this year. So what is Democracy?. This is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, you can hear me talk about film stuff every Wednesday on end credits, but this is where the realm of film and politics cross over in a unique and interesting way. Now, as we've seen this week in the United States, where prominent critics of the president were targeted with pipe bombs or pipe bomb-like devices by someone seemingly working off the president's own enemies list, democracy is not going in a good direction. In fact, the point can be argued that our democratic institutions are in serious trouble here. So to find out where we're going, Astra Taylor's newest film takes us to where democracy literally began. What is Democracy? Starts in Greece, at the site of Plato's Academy, where the great philosopher laid out his wisdom and his warning about democratic ideals. Taylor then moves on to university campuses in the United States, the streets of several U.S. cities, and across the world again, where migrants are trying to escape war, poverty, and famine, putting their hopes in a more democratic future. Throughout the film, Taylor talks to leading experts and thinkers like Sylvia Federici, Cornel West, Wendy Brown, and Angela Davis to answer the question, what is democracy? Here's a clip from the film.
I think that this democracy is dependent on the rich staying rich and the poor staying poor, and us always trying to climb that pretend invisible ladder of getting to the top and having things in abundance, as we should. But I don't think that this is a democracy. In my head, democracy doesn't feel like this in my head. It doesn't feel like being scared for my life. It doesn't feel like knowing I'm gonna be in debt in 2 years. It doesn't feel like my family being incarcerated for having a little bit of marijuana. That's not what democracy feels like to me.
Of course, it should go without saying that the question is never really settled by the end. But Taylor, through her travels and her interviews, offers a lot of interesting angles and examinations about what democracy means to different people around the world, and what it means to us here in North America. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, we have many questions for Astra Taylor. We talk about her approach to answering a question as big as what is democracy, the various philosophical values raised in the film, how sometimes democracy includes things we don't necessarily think of as democratic, and how democratic ideals haven't always been democratic ideals. We address modern politics and how we've come to see politics as ugly and why we've come to accept that only a certain political class can be our leaders. It's a big, big discussion in a tight 30-some-odd minute time frame. Astra Taylor is a very busy woman. So I caught up with Astra Taylor by phone from her home in New York City. So Astra Taylor, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I guess we'll start with the most obvious question which is how do you tackle a project like this? Did it start with the idea? And I gathered from watching the film, it didn't start with the idea of doing a documentary about what is democracy and what democracy is. But how did this project evolve into what it became?
Well, there are multiple sort of strands combined, encouraging me to take on this rather unwieldy project, right? A film about democracy. The first was, you know, I made two philosophy films. I made a film in quite a while, almost 10 years. And it was always in the back of my head that, you know, I needed to make it a philosophy trilogy. I had to make a third nerd movie. People have to know how it ends, exactly. And, you know, I wanted it to be more digressive and more sort of personal than the other films were in some ways. So I had this sort of feeling of the kind of film I wanted to make. So I love films like Chronicle of a Summer or Le Jolly May, you know, the Chris Marker film, mm-hmm. That are these sort of, you know, cinema verite in the classic sense, right, of the sort of cinema of truth, where they're just sort of simple films that are people talking and kind of getting to the sort of substance, real substance and issues, right? But they're not sort of typical, you know, political films that explore an issue in a sort of didactic way, and they're not like biopics or narratives.
Right.
They're these sort of, you know, expansive, digressive, and yet very humble films at the same time. So I kind of wanted to make a film in that vein. I had also been doing a lot of political work and organizing, you know, and this word that kept coming up was democracy.
Mm.
You know, and it, I just felt that we meaning activists, didn't actually have a lot of tools at our disposal. We knew what we were against. We knew that the political system we were fighting was corrupt and letting us down, and, you know, our representatives didn't really represent us.
Right.
But then I felt like our, yeah, our sort of conceptual toolkit was limited. And, you know, what is democracy, actually? You know, as someone says in the film, we know what they claim for it to be.
Right.
But that's not what it could be. That's not what it is. And, you know, even when I embarked on the film, I sort of wondered, should we abandon the term for something else? You know, is this, has this word just been too hollowed out and corrupted? So, you know, and at some point I just sort of thought, okay, this is actually, making a movie about the topic would give me an excuse to step back and reflect and approach these issues from a new angle, and maybe to help other people, you know, do the same.
Yeah, and it's what's interesting about the film is that I'm not sure the question is so much answered as a lot of different questions are posed. That one of the things that struck me was there's a couple of scenes right after each other where you're talking to this one girl in North Carolina who's talking about what democracy is, and to her that's the American dream. And then there's a young woman you were talking to before that who was talking about, you know, for me, democracy is this struggle. Freedom is this struggle. I can go to school and go into debt. I could be arrested by the police for having a small amount of pot in my car. And, you know, that's democracy to me. And I think the film is filled with these sort of, I guess, battling beliefs in terms of what democracy is. You know, on the one hand, you have someone talking about limited freedom. On the other hand, you're talking about someone who's talking about the base commerce of the country.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the film, you know, for me, the film has to have that, that those contradictions and that sort of polyphonic plurality of voices, because it has to be democratic in the form, you know, and in its content. And so, you know, you hit it exactly right. The film doesn't answer the question, and so I hope the title is received in a philosophical, it's a philosophical gesture.
Right.
You know, a philosophical orientation is to take anything and turn it into a question. So, you know, this word we hear all the time, what is it? I mean, this is such a contested term. It means the demos, you know, have the power, kratia. But what does it mean? Who are the people? And how do they exercise this power? You know, what values guide us? How do we establish the boundaries of our communities? There's so many questions that are just inherent in the term. And so the film is, you know, and it's partly because I do a lot of organizing work. So I know what it's like to be out there trying to persuade people to take action and telling people, you know, what the solution is. But with the film, I wanted to operate in a philosophical mode and say, you know, let's challenge our own assumptions. Let's hear from someone else, and maybe they'll take things in a direction we didn't expect. You know, let's really just try to question what we think we know. And that's sort of the Socratic mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
The film features Plato's Republic. You know, in part because I wanted to remind us that these aren't new struggles. A lot of the issues we're facing, you know, like the divide between the rich and the poor and questions of demagogues and stuff. These are challenges that go back millennia. But, you know, Plato's most famous character was Socrates, who went around asking the people of Athens, you know, what is justice? What is justice? What is the good life? And you know, how do we achieve it? And he was famous for just kind of being a gadfly and provoking people. and so, you know, I think there's a Socratic spirit. You know, there's this Socratic element to the film, and it's kind of like, well, what would Socrates look like in 2018? He wouldn't be an old man. Maybe he'd be me, you know,
right.
A woman walking around the streets, talking to kids, talking to refugees, talking to doctors. And, you know, I always want to take these ideas that can be pretty rarefied and bring them out. I mean, this is what all my films do, is like bring them out into the street and approach them with both reverence and irreverence. Like, I love philosophy, I love theory, but, you know, it's not something that just belongs in some dusty old archive.
No, and it's cast into stark relief because you talk to some people who are probably more privileged, you know, people who are live in North America, and they talk about democracy as freedom. But you're also talking mm-hmm. to that young woman who escaped Aleppo, and she says, to me, democracy is justice. And I think that was something touched upon by the people who are working in the co-op, too, that to them, democracy is justice, too. And what the film, I think, makes a compelling point is that freedom and justice, while being democratic values, are not necessarily in sync with each other in our democracy, because Cornel West makes the point that the Emancipation Proclamation was a dictatorial action.
Yeah.
That gave freedom to a lot of people when Abraham Lincoln signed it, but it was by no means a democratic action, which I just found a fascinating point. It made me think about a lot of things.
I'm glad to hear that. And I think these are all paradoxes at the heart of democracy that we have to face. So I'm writing a companion book to the film now, and the book is structured explicitly around paradoxes, sort of these tensions that are in democracy that we can't really resolve. So freedom and equality, or, you know, the need for structure, but they need also for sort of spontaneity and, you know, these democratic revolts. Mm. We also need laws. You need laws that are just. And the film, you know, I tried not to be too didactic, or there's not a big, you know, arrow that's like flashing like, hey, this contradicts the earlier point, or this adds a new dimension. But you're exactly right that there is this tension through the film of this question, well, what is freedom?
Right.
And can we talk about freedom in a collective sense? You know, and not just as a sort of individual pursuit of, you know, the good life just defined by our economic status. And right. these are really thorny questions, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, we here meaning, you know, activists like myself, we want to motivate people to join us in our struggle for what we think is right. And we kind of can try to sort of sidestep issues like, okay, well, sometimes, yeah, if we want to change laws, then we are engaging in a kind of act of coercion in service of a democratic aim, right? Because that's why Cornel West's point is so good. I mean, there was definitely grassroots mobilizations for civil rights in the U.S., but then it took the state saying, this is the law of the land,
right?
You know, and the paradox, you know, the problem has been, though, that you know, those laws can then be repealed. So we're seeing that. I mean, the film hints at this by mentioning the rolling back of voting rights, you know, that were, you know, won in the late 60s. And now the new Supreme Court is going to attack those gains, you know. So democracy is a constant struggle. And that's why I think it was important to have this long time horizon in the film.
Right.
You know, it's not, and why the film also ends with a shot of myself and Silvia Federici looking at this painting, The Allegory of Good and Bad Government. We're still just talking and debating because, you know, there's no ending. There's no resolution where democracy is concerned.
Those segments were fascinating because I think it's you that point out that in that painting of what good governance looks like, there's no figure to represent freedom and there's no figure to represent equality, which in our modern context is what makes democracy work, is this idea that we're striving towards freedom and equality. But in the medieval times, those were not concepts in good governance, because not everybody was equal, not everybody could be free.
Yeah, and you know, I love that you pick up on that. I mean, those, you know, the virtues that we assume and we just think are so, you know, essential, you know, are inventions. Mm. They're relatively, you know, recent inventions. At the same time, you know, I thought it was quite interesting making this film because I talked to a lot of people, you know, a lot of people who didn't make the final cut, you know, because that's the nature of filmmaking. And I was very, very, very struck by the fact that I would go out on the street and ask people, what is democracy? And no one ever told me democracy was equality.
Mm.
And people would say democracy was freedom, you know, especially Americans. This is what Americans think.
Right.
Going to people who, you know, were less privileged, or going to people who have a non-American international perspective, to get these ideas that, okay, democracy is actually justice. Democracy is actually, you know, everyone being able to meet their basic needs. And so I think we're also suffering from a devaluation of equality, because for me, one, mm-hmm. There are different definitions of democracy one can, invoke, right? That's part of the point of the film. But one I quite like is it's the enactment of equality.
Right.
And I think we're just letting equality fall by the wayside. And that's part of why, you know, we're in this crisis.
Well, equality is kind of at the almost is essential to these Platonic ideals that you're talking about throughout the film. And there's a scene where, I hope I don't butcher her name, but her, Iphemia Karakanza, is talking mm-hmm. about creating a lottery system where you're basically kind of drafted to do a term in government for a while. And your response was, well, that means anybody can be in government. And it's fascinating to think about it that way, because I think of the guys who do the Pod Save America podcast who are encouraging people to run for vote, because if there's one thing that the current occupant of the White House proves, is that anyone can run for office. And we've kind of been dissuaded in the modern times to think that there's a special class or a particular mm-hmm. class of people who are to be the ones doing the governing. And that's almost the opposite of some of the base philosophy of democracy.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm, you know, it's funny because I feel like that's such an important scene, and it was sort of the one I added at the last. It was one of the last things I added, because I think it was just, the film is so long. the film is very exciting, people. You should all go see it. But, you know, but I think it's really key, and it's funny because it's actually the scene I've been thinking of lately, because I think especially the way social media works, and we're living in this like nightmare of a perpetual election, right?
Yeah.
Especially in the United States, you see it. But, you know, we also, the sort of American presidential primary system has been adopted by different parties in Europe with kind of detrimental effect. And, you know, it becomes this, you know, just huge, everyone's campaigning 24 hours a day. It's like, when do they actually govern, right?
Mm-hmm.
In ancient Athens, one definition of democracy was to rule and be ruled in turn. And as Effie says in that scene, they thought elections were aristocratic, and they thought they were aristocratic because they favored the rich.
Right.
And they favored the sort of charismatic. We could say, is Trump really charismatic? But he's definitely famous and he's definitely rich.
To some people, he is, though.
And for some people, he is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people who hate him can't stop looking.
That's true, too.
But I think that idea that, you know, gosh, why do we just assume also that democracy is elections? I mean, we have juries. We have juries that are still based on the lottery system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just trying to push us out of these sort of assumptions, right? And also the assumption that we kind of have it figured out and we just need to tweak it or implement it a bit more perfectly, you know. I don't know, maybe we need to do something new. We need to try a different approach. So I hope, you know, that's part of the intention of that scene in the film in general, is just, you know, we wouldn't have the system we have today if people hadn't made these leaps.
Right.
These leaps into the unknown, and if they hadn't imagined new ways of doing things and open themselves to include new classes of people, and if people hadn't fought. And, you know, let's not be so complacent about what we've inherited.
Right. Mickey Michaud, who's someone you talk to, is a assemblyman in North Carolina. He's in the state government.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't sure the exact term. But he said he worked with Martin Luther King during the Civil Rights Movement, but he said that Martin Luther King told him that politics was a way of life. And that made me think, we have politicians now who run for office on the platform of, I'm not a politician.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, is understandable in a way because politics has become a dirty word. But the flip side of it is too, you never hear a plumber say, and I make this point sometimes when we're talking about, you know, the nature of democracy, but you don't have plumbers saying like, yeah, I fix toilets, but don't call me a plumber.
Yeah,
that's
so true.
It just seems like we've set up while setting up this class, this kind of aristocratic class, it's also something that nobody wants to be a part of, or nobody wants to admit that they're a part of. It's almost a toxic term to say you're a politician, even though that's what you're doing. But you know, you can't make politics a way of life if you're saying you're not a politician.
I think that's such a great point, and you're right. It encourages this sort of bad faith engagement, right?
Because right.
Then what happens is the people who engage with the state are just those who want to destroy it, and we know that a lot of people who want to sort of dismantle the state are doing it because they have other motivations and agendas, because they want to strengthen the private sector or get rid of regulations. And I think I think that's why I was drawn to him saying that, this idea, right? Politics is a way of life. And it's like, let's be earnest. Let's not engage in bad faith. Let's try to collaborate and make our social world better. And you know, fight for economic and political equality and freedom and all these things. So I think, you know, it's certainly one of the pathologies of this moment, and trust. There's so much sort of distrust of the political class, and yet, you know, it's not unjustified. And that's one thing the film is also trying to show, is that, well, there's you know, intense economic inequality that has allowed for, you know, an undermining of the sort of basic equality that democracy demands, and so, you know, people feel disempowered and they feel left out, and they're right. They're not wrong. They're not being listened to. But the solution then isn't just to say, like, well, you know, screw politics, I'm not getting involved. Like, the solution is to figure out how to build people power and strategically engage. And for me, I think running, you know, more people running for office is really key. But like I said, I also think it's also thinking beyond this model, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, how could we create electoral systems or have electoral reform? I mean, right now in Canada, there's, you know, proposals for, you know, voting reform that would open up space to kind of, you know, create more dynamism in politics and maybe help our democracy.
Yeah. The question is, you know, how can you... speaking of, you know, people being sort of let down by their leaders, because here in Canada, that was a proposal by the government that is currently in power. And when the time came, they just didn't deliver. And it seemed like they didn't want to deliver.
Yeah, and I thought that was such... that was such a missed opportunity, because, you know, it is quite hard to get people to think about things like, you know, electoral reform. I mean, it's even writing this one chapter in my book that deals with it, that, you know, has this question of structure and spontaneity. Okay, how do we actually structure democratic accountability and voting? I mean, I find myself getting sort of bored by the wonkiness as I write it. It's pretty, it's tragic, because it's so important. How we divide ourselves and how we count votes it's really, really key. And the fact that the, you know, Liberals kind of got people on board with the issue and then shut it down, I think it's kind of a travesty.
Yeah.
Because it's such an important issue. And that's why I included the scene going back to Cleisthenes and, you know, the sort of mythic birth moment of democracy in ancient Greece, when, you know, they decided to basically, you know, engage in an act of like democratic redistricting. In the United States, you think of redistricting as something that's just about voter suppression and gerrymandering and you know, keeping incumbents in office. But we can organize ourselves and redistrict in a way that enhances democracy.
Right. It's
and Vera, right? Like,
right.
Electoral reform can make things more democratic, not just less.
Right. But that's the thing, is that these ideas, when you go back to what inspired them and the original thoughts behind them were intended to make things more democratic, but these things have been turned and used to make our governments less democratic, which again feeds into the fed upness of the people. Now, if you wanted to go out there and propose, like, let's redistrict to, make things more equal, to have a more, more crossover of different peoples and different backgrounds, that there's a level of skepticism there because the idea has sort of been burned.
Yeah, I agree. And this is, cynicism becomes this kind of fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard to jumpstart it, which is sometimes when sometimes I think it's also because we need to speak in bolder, more galvanizing language. So, one example, I'm definitely interested in, what's happening in Canada around conversations around electoral reform. I mean, if you look at the United States, people should have the right to register to vote when they get their driver's license.
Mm.
It's like, okay, nobody's going to get excited about that. We live in 2018. Like, there's all this technology. Like, why is this a pain? This should not be difficult for people. Like, at least present people with a policy that is, that feels like effortless and universal, and it might actually have a chance of making a difference, right?
Right.
I think that there's lots of people who benefit from making democracy seem wonkier, more of a bureaucratic pain in the butt, more futile than it needs to be.
Right. And, that's, I think that's almost the point. You talked about democracy demanding a certain kind of intellectual engagement at one point in the film. And I feel like Donald Trump kind of epitomized, of all the preposterous things about Donald Trump, one can take issue with. I think the thing I take the biggest issue with, and I can say the same thing about certain politicians here in Canada too, is that the man is just seems completely devoid of curiosity. I've learned everything I needed to know by 1986, and that's sort of cemented in his head, and he hasn't had to. I guess because of his lifestyle and the way he's lived up, had to take new information in and add that to his intellectual view of the world, and I find that the most disappointing of all, curiously, of all the negatives about Donald Trump, is that it just feels like he's so incurious that he doesn't like to read, he doesn't like to take in new information.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting going back the history of anti-intellectualism in North American life, in the U.S. and in Canada, and, there has been this division between sort of mental labor and manual labor, and liberal people have also reinforced it by hoarding educational opportunities for themselves and their kids, right?
Yeah.
I think the issue of education is such a complicated and thorny one, and it's a thread throughout the film. I mean, I think on one level, the film is, because of its philosophical orientation and the fact the title is a question mark, it is a love letter to curiosity, right? And to asking questions. And it's me also trying to say, as an intellectual, part of being an intellectual is asking questions and not knowing everything. Again, it's the Socratic thing, knowing what you don't know, being oriented towards the world in a way that you want to learn about it, you want to engage in dialogue, you want to be surprised. And that you challenge ourselves and unsettle our assumptions. But the education comes up much more directly in the sense that there's a paradox in the film that's evoked by the Wendy Brown, and it's Rousseau's paradox of how do you build a democratic people out of an undemocratic people, right?
Yeah.
People are so cynical, as we've been discussing. They're so disgusted and disappointed, or worse, right? They're xenophobic. They're afraid of others. They're racist. They only care about the American dream. How do we change society? And the pat answer is okay, through education.
Right.
And I think there's truth to that, but the film also tries to show that the the way students are being educated now, especially students sort of at the bottom of the social hierarchy, they're getting an education that basically says they don't matter. So there's the scene with the school kids in Florida who are, you know, being taught very undemocratic lessons by their teachers and the school's administrators. And so I hope, you know, implicitly in the film, there's a sort of a radical challenge of like, okay, well, what kind of education does democracy really need? It's not just like opening up people's brains and saying, okay, these are the facts and now you'll vote the right way and you'll be, you'll be informed or something
right,
like
right.
that. It has to be something so much richer, right? And so much more empowering and so much more respectful of people's capacities and their inherent dignity than what we have today.
And it also has to be more about job training, because I think that's the duality of education, is that it's some people can go and get educated for the purpose of gaining knowledge, but most of us have to go and get an education for the purpose of getting a job at the end. And I think that's
I think this is the thing. Well, I mean, there is a history of trade unions trying to break down the divide of like, okay, yeah, sure, we can get trained for jobs, but we're still people. We're
right.
still whole beings. So this, you know, this divide between the vocational and the intellectual, I mean, to me, in a democratic society, we wouldn't have that. We would somehow be able to, you know, let people
do both.
Let people be both.
Yeah.
Right. And this is what, you know, in there's a strong trade union tradition of workers engaging in, you know, night classes and doing all sorts of self-education, because, you know, they were like, yeah, we're whole people. And so, you know, for me, truly democratic education would have that, and work would have to be radically reformed, because I think one reason people don't participate is that they don't have time. I mean, the 40-hour
yeah.
work week is becoming a thing of the past, right? And
yeah.
so if you work, if you're working more than 9 to 5, when do you get to be a citizen?
Right.
So I think, you know, the challenges are really deep, and that's why the film doesn't, you know, have a pat answer.
Well, given that, what do you hope people leave the movie with? I mean, do you hope that, you know, they see this Friday night and then on Saturday afternoon they're out in the streets? Or is this the beginning of a discussion? Or what do you hope people leave after the movie? What do you hope they take with them?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that people go and have debates with their, you know, friends and family, and this film is really meant to kind of create a space for the viewer to have their own thoughts and their own reactions. So I hope that there's rich discussion afterwards, and I do hope to also be able to sort of plan, my hope is to go around with it and plan a kind of Agora assembly tour where I show the film and then also introduce audiences to different activist groups, and that, you know, that expand the sort of idea of, you know, what it means to fight for a better democracy, right? Because as the film shows, it's not just about elections. It affects all areas of our lives.
Right.
You know, so but for me, it really is, it's a fundamentally about a film of ideas and an invitation to think. So I just, you know, I hope people leave the theater thinking more instead of feeling like, oh my God, that was too much philosophy for me. And it's a film that is meant to have, it's received in different ways, but for me, it's a hopeful film.
Mm.
And, you know, it's true that it doesn't have a sort of happy, traditional happy ending where suddenly you see, you know, everyone pouring out into the streets and rousing protest music. But I think the hope in it is more honest than that. And it's that we're part of a really long struggle.
Yeah.
And it's a struggle even before the word democracy existed. Yeah, sure, the ancient Greeks, you know, invented the word democracy. They didn't invent the practice of it.
Right.
This is something that people have been doing when they, you know, stand up for themselves and stand up for each other. And, you know, right now we're in a moment of crisis. It can seem that things are going backwards, but, you know, it's not any more difficult than challenges that people have faced before. And for me, that historic arc is, you know, is inspiring. We're part of something bigger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of things bigger than ourselves, I know you have your second job as an activist to get to, so I'll let you go. But Astra Taylor, thank you so much for the talk, and thank you so much for the film. I think people will get a lot out of it.
Oh, and thanks for watching it and for such great thoughtful questions. So I think that made me feel your thoughtful questions made me feel encouraged that the film is doing its work.
Well, thank you.
And once again, that was Astra Taylor, the director of What is Democracy?, which is part of this year's Guelph Film Festival. It will be screened on Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m. in the Council Chambers at City Hall. It's a co-presentation with OPERG, and producer Leia Martin will be on hand after the film for a Q&A. For more information about the Guelph Film Festival or to buy tickets, you can go to its website, guelphfilmfestival.ca. And that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics. It's Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean every Monday. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you would like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, you can check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.